Without any further ado, I'm going to give it over to Steve.
Okay, I'm going to change the mood lighting for the purpose of recording video so we can see the screen better. So, how's that look? Good. Look pretty good.
I'm in the mood now.
Yeah. So, welcome everybody. I'm Steve McAtee from Rain Corporation up in Mukilteo, not too far from here. I've been there for 28 years, which is a long time, which is why my brain cells are growing out on my head here. And I'm in product development, so I'm one of the guys that works on what products to work on next. And I work with a team of people that comes up with what products to do, and then I hand the design ideas off to engineering. They do the actual design. I'm a product kind of guy. So I'm going to talk about this HAL system, DSP architecture. RAIN has been around since 1981 up the street here, still owned by the same gal that started in her garage in Montlake Terrace. Linda Ahrink still runs the place. And Dennis Bond, engineering guy, wrote lots of AS papers and RAIN notes and this kind of thing. So, great. So these days we're doing these kind of installation products we're going to talk about. We still do a lot of DJ products too, so we're in the DJ market. So if you know RAIN, that's what we've been doing these days. So this HAL system architecture. So, of course, HAL, if you're old enough, you know that HAL is from the movie, right? How many people have seen the movie, HAL Kills Astronauts? So all the young people haven't seen this movie yet. It's an old sci-fi movie from the 60s called 2001 A Space Odyssey, and it's about this computer that runs a spaceship that goes to Jupiter or somewhere, and the computer slowly goes crazy and starts killing astronauts and shooting them off into space, and it's pretty whack. And if you know RAIN at all, and you read any of our manuals or online information, we tend to have a really sick sense of humor about the world because we kind of think that you better be, you know, having a laugh every once in a while if you're trying to be a human. So that's where it came from. We even stole the logo notice, the little circular red guy. So we stole the idea, and we got ourselves some, we'll talk about this logo. So, and we use the word HAL here because architecturally we'll see several reasons why we would call it HAL. So the HAL needs to give you permission to do everything. So on this spaceship you couldn't go to the bathroom or order food or, you know, open a door without the computer. So here's what we're going to cover. We're going to cover this drag and drop idea. Rick wanted me to cover this concept of drawing the audio flow you want. And some people in computer world are used to this in their plug-in space or creating this, you know, software audio flow you want in a recording world. But we're in this world of installing products. And we'll talk about the application spaces that we're in here. So what the product goes into, what kind of applications we are used in. And then we're going to get into architecture. So how do you put a whole group, we're going to talk about like 30 products or 40 products. And we'll look at sort of how they sort of piece together, how they work together, and how do you get such a, you know, large number of products to work together. And so there's several kinds of products. There's these HAL DSP brains, and I brought three of the four. So there's a big one and a smaller one that I didn't bring, and an even smaller one and then a tiny little one. So we'll look at what those are. We'll look at some things we call DR, digital remotes, which are basically just stuff with knobs on, stuff that turns the volume up and down, you know, controllers, if you want to think of it that way. We'll look at things called RADs, remote audio devices. And we'll see what those things are. They're basically the converter at the wall. So we'll look at these. We have some of these up here. And then we'll look at some rack mount expanders, which are these gadgets up here with the red ports on the back. So these expanders are another way you can expand the audio and the control for all these products and how they work together. And one of them includes Dante. So if you're in this installation world, you do these churches or performance theaters. Dante is an Ethernet networking protocol. How many people are familiar with Dante? You know, half the room, which is good. So it's an Ethernet transport of digital audio over a standard old audio Ethernet network. So we'll look at that briefly. And then sort of at the end, we're going to have a break somewhere in here. So someone's going to throw something at me, I think. Did somebody bring a tomato or anything to throw at me when it's halftime? You know, we're all have a halftime. And there's drawings at halftime. That's, you know, a pretty common thing. We have some various giveaways. So if you haven't filled out the form on the front, and when you walked in, that's how we're going to draw names, so you win fabulous prizes. But the end is sort of the kicker, the get on the plane indicator. How many people have a get on the plane indicator? So Mark Rogers is a good example. He's a consultant. And if you go to a job site, we're talking about installations, right? You do a church or your hotel or a restaurant or a performance venue. You tend to, you know, have a sound contractor install the product and you put it in. And if you're the designer of the system, whether you're working at a contractor that designed the system, or you're a consultant where you're designing the system, you're hired by a general contractor or somebody to do a building or what have you, there's this concept of a punch list, which is you show up at the job site and you make sure that how you designed it is really how they physically put it in. And there's a punch list. Oh, this XLR jack wasn't soldered correctly. oh, this thing doesn't even work over here at all, and you should have to fix all these things on a punch list. And at the end, we'll talk about this indicator that's in the sort of heart of the whole product line. It's the get on the plane indicator, which means if it's green on the software screen, you as the consultant or the designer can get on the plane and go check out the system, because the punch list is completely done, which is kind of an interesting different thing, because not many products go after that problem of making it easy for you to know that the system's ready and working. So we'll get into that at the very end. So that's the whole evening. I tend to talk a little fast, so if I'm talking fast and you have a question, just raise your hand, no problem. So let's talk about drag and drop audio and look at what that is a little bit, so you get the flavor of what we're talking about here. So here's a screenshot. I just thought I'd open the software and show you. So all these products up here are running on a Windows application that you can get from our website for free. It's called Halogen, and it's the thing that programs all these things. And so if you open this up, the first thing it does, it asks you what kind of product you want to work on. There's several of these HAL boxes we can choose from that are new, or I have files that I've been working on, the Cooper City, Florida City Council system I did this morning. And here's live boxes we'll look at later. So let me open up a blank one of these four things, and we'll look at more detail what the hardware looks like in a bit here. But let's open up a blank file. And there's two major sections of the software. There's this hardware idea, and then there's this processing idea, which is the concept, what's the audio flow going to look like? So we can create the audio flow we want inside this part of the window. So let's look at the drag and drop idea. One is that this HAL DSP box, there's audio channels in here, so I can zoom in and, you know, call this what audio channel I want and name that anything I'd like. I can also go in and drag and drop more audio in than output. So these RADs we'll look at in a little while are more audio channels in and out. And so I can drag these over here and tell the HAL to expect this particular model, or maybe a RAD 16 model, or all these different models. We'll look at these guys in a little while. So I'm telling the HAL to expect that model to be plugged in. So there's part one of drag and drop. But where the bulk of the work really happens is over here in the processing audio flow. There's three tabs on the left here. One is the audio channels in and out. So here's some audio channels, and I can hold down the control key and grab several audio channels and drag these off to the right, and there's my audio channels coming in. And those audio channels can be in the rack room, and as we'll see later, they can also be on these RAD gadgets that might be out on a wall, you know, hundreds of feet away. So there's another audio input. And output, same kind of the story. I can just grab the outputs here and grab these guys and put them over here, and then I want to wire things in. So first thing you'll notice is some color coding. If you look up here on the front, we got some orange and green on the back, and that matches with the software. So you understand whether you're looking at an audio jack on the back of the rack that's green or orange. Is my mic moving around a bunch, or am I just hearing it? There you go. So there's the orange and green, and that's where the color coding on the boxes themselves come from. I can go to the DSP tab now, and here's where the audio stuff is. This is the, you know, if you're an audio guy, you know this stuff, Dynamics. AGC, automatic gain control, or auto leveler. That's sort of the soft talker, loud talker problem. If you have somebody at a church or meeting room where you have somebody talking really quiet, they'll turn the gain up for you and turn it back down if somebody shouts and that kind of thing. And I won't go through all these. I just want to give you the flavor of the choices you have. So I can grab one of those and plop that out here in the audio flow and wire that thing together, because maybe one of these inputs is coming from a CD player. And everybody still have a CD player? Wow, a lot of people still have a CD player, wow. Anyway, so you know how you put some CDs in and they're not loud enough? So an AGC will make those soft CDs a little louder, or the ones that are too loud. Metallica had a great album several years ago, it was just completely clipped and too loud. This wouldn't solve that, but hey, it would turn it down some. So you get the idea. So there's a whole bunch of things in here. Ambient noise sensing, this is the concept. We use this in lobbies and train stations. Where they've got a paging audio system and there's a train sitting there and you need the page speaker to be turned up a little bit versus a train running next to you, and so you better turn the audio up and turn it back down again when the train leaves. So there's that idea. So compressor, limiter, ducker, you guys are used to Dynamics. I can go in here and grab filters. There's feedback suppression and high and low cut filters. And you can get as fancy as you like with this. If you're a loudspeaker guy, how many loudspeaker guys in here? Not too many loudspeaker guys this time around. You know, people that love these...
We're all headphones,
there you go. Yeah. So you can go to the cut filter here, and double-click and open this up. You see there's all kinds of filter types in here. So you get into Butterworth and Linkwitz-Riley filters and first-order filters and Bessel filters, and how many people love the sounds of these filters? Love them at home. My wife's always loving these things. Sounds great to my wife, so you know how that works. So there's some filter world stuff, parametric EQs and graphics. FIR filters is pretty new thing. FIR, finite impulse response filters. That's a pretty common thing in a lot of these loudspeakers. Designs that you can go to the loudspeaker. Fulcrum Acoustics is a good example. They're in Boston. The design team from there used to be at EAW, if you remember EAW before Loud took them over, you know, if you follow this history. So FIR is a filter type that you can really play some amazing stuff. And a good way to think of it is if you design a loudspeaker and you put a tweeter in it, it has like a horn, you'll also often have phase distortion if the sound bounces off the horn a little bit. And so that gives you, you know, reflections that are time-based. And an FIR filter can do that kind of stuff because you can change the phase and the magnitude independently, which is pretty wacky. It tends to take a lot of DSP processing power, but that's a filter that you can put in here. You can import the filter that the loudspeaker manufacturer has designed, plop that in there, and now the loudspeaker sounds way better and literally removes the reflections. So if we had loudspeaker guys in here, they'd go, wow, pretty cool. And you can get even fancier. You can measure a sound system, and if you had a loudspeaker next to a wall and it's relatively short distance from the wall, the sound bounce you can remove by sort of pre-echoing the audio that gets sent to the loudspeaker, so to get rid of that reflection, which is pretty wacky if you think about that. Historically, most audio acoustics guys don't think this way. But
you mean they didn't have to blow up the King Dome?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that's sort of filter land. There's crossovers, of course. Then we get into the level controls and meters, and there's delay in here for distance delay or video frames. We do a lot of sports bars and this kind of thing. So when they turn the video on and you got CNN or those, you know, football games on in the sports bar, they can delay the audio so it's just in time, so you got the lip sync problem because the video is often not quite synced up. So you can do those kind of things. Or, you know, I can go on and on and on. But you can grab these things. Here's an automatic mic mixer. So if you have several microphones and you want to EQ them first, I can add this gain-sharing auto mic mixer. And I can grab multiple wires, and I can wire those together. And I can put a cut filter on the input side and rearrange this audio in any way I'd like. Change the wires, put a cut filter on first. So you get the idea that literally the box doesn't even pass audio. None of these pass audio until you draw all this stuff. So pretty useful, especially when we get into installations that we'll talk about here when we get back to the PowerPoint slides. Some of the beefy, more interesting stuff, if you're into this market at all, you see the competition. There's lots of companies we compete with. Symmetrix is a good one. They're up the street here. Biamp is another one. BSS makes some great products that do all these kinds of things, sort of targets this market problems. There's a bunch of stuff that's sort of big picture oriented that, unlike what I think of as a Lego, like an EQ is a Lego and a compressor is a Lego kind of idea. Some of these blocks in here, this distributed program bus and paging stations, they're sort of more application specific. It's a whole group of blocks that work together in some way to solve a problem. So don't need to spend a great deal of time in there because we're not really trying to train you guys on the software, just trying to get you the flavor of what we mean by drawing the audio flow you want. And so you can get into all kinds of things in here. Zone processors and paging into multiple zone systems. We have a room combined block that might be worth interestingly looking at because room combining is a very big target. We do a lot of hotels, Marriotts and Hiltons. If I open this block, I can set up rooms with walls that open and close. And so, for example, if we look at here, I can go into room A and say, well, room A has, you know, 5 or 6 microphones I can just add to this room. And maybe it has a couple line inputs because they got, you know, 3 or 4 mic jacks, XLRs on the wall in a hotel meeting room. Guys have mostly been in a hotel meeting room. And then you have an audio feed out, the room output, and the record output. And so this block will sort of do that in the sense of you've got multiple rooms. So let me open this up, zoom back up. And in here I can say, well, what are the layout of the walls like? Are they down the hall from each other if they have these rooms? So we've done a bunch of stuff. The Hyatt and the Sheraton here in Seattle will have this kind of system in it. And I can move these walls in the rooms any way I like. Maybe it's a hallway outside. And then I can say, well, where are the walls open and close? So I can get pretty heavily into drawing rather complicated audio systems as the walls open and close. And one of the troubles you have in these kind of systems is if you want all the mics in the room to work because all the walls have opened, you better auto mix all those together. Because from an acoustic feedback point of view, you better have an auto mixer that works that way. And that's what this box does under the hood is as I go in here, there's a different room processor. So let's go into room A, for example. Room A is the room that exists with the microphones for room A. And the mixer, and you got a selector for here for what background music you want to hear once I put it all in there. And then you got a level control, how loud is the audio in here? So this gets interesting because now when you open all the walls, if you want a volume control on this wall and another volume control on this wall, you have to answer the question, when you open the walls, do both volume controls control both rooms? And the answer is sometimes. So we're getting pretty deep pretty quick, but I just wanted to give you the flavor of some of the kind of applications we're into. That changes completely if I go into room ABC, right? Room ABC is the room that exists when all the walls open. And now I can go in here, and if room C here, I can go down here and squeeze in a couple more microphone inputs. And you'll see that I can easily add more channels for the microphones that are in room C. And now this block will just scale to the number of rooms you have. So room combining is a pretty nasty application to pull off with an audio system, especially in the old analog days. How many people did the old analog days with patch bays is how they did it?
Yeah,
exactly. So that's the flavor that I thought I'd try to show you some of this drag and drop audio stuff. So that's the big picture. I'm going to open a file here in a little while and get a little more deeply into it. But that's the basics of an audio system you do. And there's also control. How do you link volume controls together? And we'll show you this as we go.
Just a quick question.
Quick question.
To me, looking at
it. You want the mic? I'll repeat it for you. Go ahead.
It looks to me as if it has kind of a practical brilliance to it. Is everybody in the block do this? This is so smart.
Yeah, it's not uncommon to have products that we compete with, the ones I mentioned, Symmetrix is the stuff. They're all very different approach to it. But yeah, it's a very practical solution to this problem. Mark Rogers can speak to this because this is his world also.
I don't think we've done a job that didn't use DSP for 5 years.
Yeah, he said that he hasn't. Every job he's done in the past 5 years, they always use boxes like this.
Some of them are fixed architecture for real simple systems, but most of them are this kind of thing. Well, the idea that you're using DSP in a way that you're addressing very real world problems. And you're providing for those real-world problems, not just one, but intelligent alternative solutions.
Yeah.
This is good.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, so yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty fun. Dan, you have a question?
Yeah, is it possible for this to be controlled by a user, a qualified user?
We're going to get deeply into this question if people can use this product on their own. Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to leave the mic up here.
For most systems, this is actually cheaper than doing it analog.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask, essentially you virtually eliminate huge snakes and tons of copper cables.
Exactly. We're going to get deeply into this topic, too. We're eliminating a lot of different things, lots of analog audio cable and conduit, and so we're going to get deeply into that exact topic as we go. Yeah, another question.
Of the small system, smallest, I guess, what's the I.O.?
We're going to get into that exact thing. Okay. So let's do that now. So let's get back to our little PowerPoint slides and continue down this path. So here's the kind of applications we're using this in. We're doing lots of retail restaurants. So Abercrombie & Fitch and Hollister and Victoria's Secrets and Williams-Sonoma. And we do a lot of chain restaurants, Maggiano's and this kind of thing. So it's because once you draw the software program you want and the audio flow works and the controls you want work, you just put it in the box and you ship it to the job site over and over and over again. So that's pretty common. We do lots of mostly churches, a certain size box. This box here goes to mostly churches because they need the cry room feed and the hallway and the lobby and the bathroom feed. And there's the main sanctuary and the under balcony. So it's that kind of size. We do lots of meeting rooms, little convention spaces, a lot of room combining. This, hotels with the walls that open and close. We're doing Marriott Courtyards, Hilton Garden Inns, and this kind of thing. So it's a lot of cookie cutter designs. But there's also little one-offs, little art museums. So here's the list. So we got performance spaces, art museums, we got a lot of schools and high school, the high school gym, the auditorium, or what I call the cafetorium. It's the cafeteria at noon, and it's the auditorium at night. You've seen how many people went to elementary school. That's what they had. Yeah, everyone, so we do that. Hotel land, sushi, Nobu Sushi in Malibu, if you're a Nobu Sushi fan. A lot of churches, hospitals, you get the idea. Kind of installation space kind of world.
What, Minneapolis, the orchestra hall?
Yeah, so we'll do the distribution for that. We did the one in Jerusalem, orchestra hall there, like distribution through the hallways and the lobby and the little chime that goes off when it's time to go back to see the second part of the symphony. We'll do those kinds of rooms too, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
So it's paging, background music, small meetings, large
meetings? Small meeting rooms, big reading rooms. We'll get into really big systems here, as we will see. So scales up and down. So let's look at a few things here then. So architecturally, of course, we're audio guys, so we don't deal with video at all, kind of like Rick Chin. So the HAL system then, this software we call Halogen, is really two pieces. The main piece we just looked at is this Windows software called Halogen that runs on a PC. But the same exact software code that our software guys write, Mukilteo, can be compiled and put in the Linux computer that's in here. So all these have a little Linux computer. And why this is the sort of key architectural discussion. Why we need that is because if you're designing a sound system and they haven't even broken ground on the building yet, you want to design a sound system in software and never have the hardware for a year or two because they haven't even built the building yet. So you want to be sure that when you spec a system, Mark Rogers, what's the typical distance between time between when you spec a thing and when it goes in? Typical.
Two and a half years.
So this means when he designs a sound system, he needs to be able to open our software, or a contractor, the design guy needs to open the software and design it and make sure everything about it works and fits the requirements and the whole thing works. And more importantly, and here's the important step of why these two things are the same software code, is when 2 years later he installs it, he wants to be sure that the design from 2 years ago goes in the hardware and it does what that did 2 years ago. And it better do it exactly that way or someone's in trouble. And most of the boxes don't do it this way, which is not subtle. So that's a pretty deep architectural thing. So this is sort of the heart of how the products all sort of work together. So we'll look at these four HAL DSP brains, four different models. They can be controlled in three ways with these DR remotes with knobs and buttons on them. We'll look at those. We'll look at the TCP/IP control, which is Ethernet control. There's a lot of these. How many people know what AMX Crestron is? AMX Crestron are companies that make these touch screens. If you go to a fancy boardroom or a fancy corporate place, they'll have these little touch screens. Some of the high-end home hi-fi guys have these fancy color touch screens, and you know everyone's doing it on their phone these days, and we'll get to that too. But that's control system world. And we'll look at something we call web controls, because there's a web server in these boxes. They have Ethernet ports, so we can set up web pages. We'll look at that, and I'll show you an example. You can expand the audio in the two ways we were going to talk about, the RAD audio devices, remote audio devices, so we'll look at what these things do. And then we'll look at the rack expander gadgets we call EXPs. So the model numbers are DR for digital remote, RAD for remote audio device, and EXP for the expander. So let's look at the software part a little bit. So of course the hardware that you physically purchase is going to sit here and you buy the rack box and it goes in the rack room and you put these RADs out on the wall somewhere. And we'll look at what these RADs are in a little bit. And then you set up the software that we just looked at, the lower left corner here, and you set that up in the software, and you send that information down to the HAL box, and then the guy that designed the system or installed it leaves with the computer, and the system just runs. And so that's the basic idea of how a physical, you know, how they are laid out in the building. They're spread around the building. Some things are in the rack room. Some things are on the wall, et cetera. So let's look at that software a little bit. There's the design guy. He's trying to design the sound system, so he needs to sit down there with the software, and one goal of the software is the left column here we'll look at. They're designing stuff, and there's solutions for that. In the middle column, we'll talk about the stuff that the guy that installs it has to do. Finally, 2 years go by, and you have to put the physical product in. You want to install that, so you have to set it up and control it and get the gain structure right and various things like that. And then you operate the system 24/7. Our Linux computer just runs. It runs 24 hours a day. There's no power buttons on anything because pretty much they're always left on 24 hours a day. Designed to do that. Just works fine. So if you're in design mode here on the left, you got yourself, you're trying to come up with a preliminary design, such as what's the audio I/O you need or what processing do you need? Do you need EQ and how many things are you mixing together? And do you need a volume control over here? And these kind of things. So you're setting all that stuff up in the design mode of the software. And then one of the keys to this architecture here is we wanted to be able to completely tweak and configure and test and get all the controls and all the knobs to work exactly as you want, even though you won't buy the hardware for a year and a half. So that's the key to the architecture here.
You say this designing in Windows, this IDE is the one that's free on your website.
Yeah.
So you can just sit there and tweak and say, oh, yeah.
You can tweak it all day long, you bet. You just get it from our website.
Very cool.
Yeah, so... it's installation world, right? It's a very different, you know, application space, but it has a very specific set of requirements that are kind of interesting. It's also a complicated sales structure. A good example, Mark Rogers here is a consultant. He'll design the system, but now that goes out to bid, and they have several people bid on that, so the different contractors try to bid for that, and somebody's going to win that, and it's usually the if there's public money involved, it's the lowest bid wins, right? You've heard that? low speed wind. So that's what we call, we jokingly call it the trunk slammer. Trunk slammer is the guy that, you know, he's back there. He's, you know, who knows what this guy does on the side, but he won the job. So you have to get that guy up and running on these sound systems and get them to work. So that's a challenge. So the center channel here, getting back. If you're installing the system, the keys here are, we're going to get some automatic verification of the signal and the infrastructure of the building. We're going to get into this thing, and at the end we'll talk about this get-on-the-plane indicator and how useful that is. And when you really screw things up, have anyone done, you know, their home hi-fi or setting up a studio, and they ever screwed up anything? Just once, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. So this will show you this stuff. And so we'll get into this, and we'll show you what we mean by it'll give you troubleshooting indication in hardware and software that you screwed up something. So we'll see all that in several examples. So you're going to finalize and tweak the sound system, and you're going to feel good that the software and the hardware behaviors all match, because the software and the hardware are the same exact software code. So they can't not match, right? It's the same exact code. So there you go. All right, operationally then, you're going to run the system 24/7. We have several ways people just run it. Sometimes you just plug the thing in, they program it, and they leave, and no one ever touches anything, no controls, no nothing, it just runs, right? A good example would be, we do a lot of churches where the church has a sound guy in the back, and they got a console in the back, and he's doing their Sunday gig, and they got the rock and roll band church, and, you know, at 10 a.m. on Sunday, and at 8 a.m. on Sunday, they have the traditional church with the, you know, maybe just guitar or the organ. And then on Thursday, they'll have bingo night. So they need a preset for bingo. And there's nobody there to run the console. How many people go to church bingo? And there's no console guy. Or the wedding or the funeral at the church. So that's where our product would kick in. And while the console would feed these set of products for large and small systems and do the hallways and the bathroom feed and all this stuff, you can also use it as an auto mixer. And so they power the console off. And now the three or four mics they need for the wedding get plugged into this, and it just auto mixes. No knobs needed if you don't want. So it's another way to think how the product might be used. So that's useful. So that's where the web server would come in. We'll see an example of that. Some people, we do a lot of these chain restaurants where the contractors have a remote desktop PC on the job site, and they open up our software in the PC that's on the job site physically and talk to our box and make sure that the waitress on the patio in Connecticut can turn the volume up and down. Oh, I turned the power button on and it doesn't work, and they can debug that from wherever they are in the country. So it's a very useful way to do it. And these indicators we'll look at are pretty useful for the patio person on the, something's broken. And you can ask questions we'll see here. Is the power light on? Or is it flashing red? Here's a test for you guys. How many people think, is this device happy with its flashing red lights or unhappy? I think you guys could be installers. So, there you go. So we'll get into this. So this is this indicator idea on these DRs and RADs, and we'll see a lot of different things. So that's just an introduction to this. Let's look at these HAL DSP brains. So someone asked how big they are, how small they get. So the smallest thing we make is two channels in and out, two audio channels. Pretty yawn. How many people are yawning at two channels? So where this would go is you're in the middle of Wisconsin or Texas somewhere, and you have a high school. How many people went to high school? And they have a football field, and they have this like paging horn on the home side and a paging horn on the away side. And they got a little guy up in the booth, and he's got a little console. And hopefully it doesn't say, you know, I'm a bad-mouth any companies. Never mind. Got a little console, and they need to have a home side and an away side, and they want to EQ that paging horn and make sure it sounds really good. So that's what you would do with this. You plug in your console into one channel and a paging mic into the second, and your two outputs, the orange blocks on there, would go to your two power amplifiers, the home and away side. And we'll see later there's an Ethernet port in here, there's a web page. So maybe they want to take their phone out of their pocket, they want to walk over to the guest and away side and make sure it sounds good and get the volume right, and they can do this. So we'll show you how that works. So there's how you would use a HAL 4. Very useful for a very small system. Next, we bought a HAL 3S, the 3 model. So it's not 2 in and out, it's 6x10, but let's talk about 6x10. So there's really only 2 audio channels in here. The green guys are 2 analog audio channels in, and the orange guys are 6 audio channels out, balanced in or out. In software, you can set up these inputs as either mic or line, with phantom power and without, take your pick, however you'd like to use it. And the blue ports on the back here, and you saw the blue in the software, and the brown in the software we'll get back to. These are actually audio ports, and so an RJ45 is used, and you plug in these things we call RADs, and we'll look at these things in a little bit, what plugs in there. But depending on what RAD you buy, that's another couple audio channels in of digital audio. We'll see what's in there. It's basically AES 3 and a twist, so we'll look at that. So there's a 6x10 box, depending on which two rad boxes you buy and want to physically put into the system, get more audio in and out. So, and then there's a couple of control ports and some logic ports, because it's pretty common in these kind of installations that the fire alarm guys give you a switch closure, and you better mute the audio while the fire alarm's going off, because otherwise you cannot have building occupancy. You can't even walk in the building. So that's why you have a logic port. A how-to, I didn't physically bring one of these with me, but a little bit more. This has 8 analog line level or mic in, and 8 analog outs on the orange ports. It's got 4 of these rad ports, so this is another 8 channels of digital audio in and out, 2 channels in and out each, as we'll look at these rads a little bit. And there's a couple AES-3 inputs out and outs on here, AES-3 in and out. That would be your console at the back of the church or the performance venue. You take your AES-3 out of the console, you run that right into the back of this box. Or we have a box that is an AES-3 little rad. We'll look at that in a little bit. So that's a 18 by 18 kind of size. So if you have 12 mics and a couple lines, this is a box for you. If you need 3 or 5 zones, you get your pick. This is the box. Yeah?
I was just asking, this basically would kill any 70-volt system for like a small like dental office or a home, a nice home, where you'd want to have speakers throughout.
It could. It might kill a 70-volt, or it might enhance a 70-volt system a lot, which is maybe even more important. Depends what you're doing, right? It depends on your budget. You know, how many people want to buy a box like this? Is this friendly for the touring guy that wants XLR jacks? Probably not. Do we sell it to those guys occasionally? Although a guy will put it in a rack and they'll put a little XLR panel on the back and they'll wire to these Euroblock, you know, installers we call them, these Euroblocks, these green and orange ports. They're little screw terminal things. We have them up here you can look at the break. So audio channels in now. So that looks good. So then we also have a HAL 1X. Yeah, Rick.
Are these things hi-fi?
Are these things hi-fi? Hi-fi, that's a great thing. How do you define hi-fi?
How do they compare to the competitors, basically?
Okay, yeah. I always answer these kind of questions with the dynamic range question, the answer. So dynamic range-wise, every little thing varies a little bit. So the dynamic range of these things is not quite as good as the rack boxes, because this is on a 24-volt power supply. So these tend to have a dynamic range of like 105 dB, you know, better than CDs, you know, 103, 105 kind of range. The rack boxes, almost all of these rack box gadgets, they're all 109 dB dynamic range.
A-weighted?
Yep. You can go on our data sheet. I didn't bring the full data sheet. I brought some lit up here if you want to take any of this home, not that anyone needs paper anymore. But on the website, there's full data sheets, and we just close all this stuff, and we got Camillo making sure this works, because that's what Camillo's in charge of, is testing that every single one of these channels on every product. You know, we test all that stuff.
Do you have flat specs also, or just A-weighted?
Just A-weighted, mostly because we have A-weighted is mostly, you know, how to convert from A-weighted to unweighted, right?
Remove the filter and measure it again.
That's one way. There's also, if you know you're in 20, have you ever read the Renote on specifications? You should go read their specification Renote. And the reason why we put A-weighting on it is solely because it's the way you can look at our competitors to see
that's
how
the way
we
they do things these
everyone
days.
Does it that way.
But not everyone. RME, for instance, has A and non-A weighted.
Sure, and you can call me, and I'd be glad to sit down with Camilo, and I'll have him measure it for you, and I'll give you that number easy. So, just to make it easy to compare with everybody else's. How many people require 109 dB dynamic range in the sound system? Dan, probably true. Yeah, you bet. How many people in a church probably need 109 dB dynamic range? Or more importantly, how many physical rooms in the world can deal with 109 dB dynamic range? Anybody?
That's the question.
Zero, right? What's the quietest room you've ever been in?
The anechoic chamber.
Anechoic chamber?
At Electrovoice or the one in Berlin.
Sure, so an anechoic chamber. But like where you would want to go listen and have an event happen. It's probably not going to happen in anechoic chamber. Would you?
No.
Yeah, and not even Betty would approve that at your house.
That's
you?
Right.
Yeah, and your wife, no. So Benaroya Hall is a good example. You go to Benaroya Hall, 25 dB SPL is a sort of number for that. And what's the loudest thing humans want to hear? Where do your ears like sort of break down? 120 dB, 115 maybe? You know, depends on how old you are and you know this kind of thing. So what's the difference between 120 dB and 25?
95.
So how many people really need 109 dB dynamic range? Move on. Okay, let's go. All right. So the HAL 1X is the box I brought here on the left. And this has this expansion capability. There's five of these models, and we'll look at these in a little more detail probably after the break and look at what these boxes all do. But this gets stupid, right?
There was one question on dynamic range.
Dynamic range question, yeah.
Would this have a headphone application?
We do not make in this family a way to plug a headphone jack in yet until we get to this product, which we'll get to at the end. But yeah. We don't really go into the hi-fi headphone space, if that's what you're sort of asking.
Probably so,
I can sell you a DJ mixer with a seriously kick-ass headphone amp on it.
But it's
attached to a DJ mixer, probably. Yeah, go ahead.
What kind of latency do these things have, and does it increase as you get up into these larger ones?
Excellent question. So the question was, what's the latency on this box? And we'll see some answers to this question, but it gets a little hairy. There's a page on the data sheet that maybe I should just pull up that gets into the details. So this is an excellent, really good question. So let's talk about that, because that's a good sort of sidebar discussion. Let me go find the data sheet and open this thing up for you. It's in here.
I didn't mean to sidetrack.
No, this is an important question. And why, to me, this is such an important question because, where's my, does anybody see how data sheet?
Oh, what extent?
All specs. This is the one I want. Beautiful. All right. Why this is an important question is because the competition model of how the marketing, anybody work in marketing? Nobody work in marketing? Good. Yeah, Rain doesn't have a marketing department either. So why that's an important question and why I tend to focus some time on it is everyone is all about, especially when you get into this networking stuff, Dante networking, Covernet networking, this kind of world, it's always the marketing that is, oh, we have a lower latency than so-and-so. And so I like to really sort of nip this one in the butt. So we can go down here. Let's go find the delay page, which I think might take me a second to find, but it's maybe worth taking an extra second. Here's the data sheet on the latency. So this gets pretty nasty quick. So let's take our time and just look at least one of these things. So latency question was, if I come in the analog input, the green thing, we even color-coded this so you can understand it a little better, there's a latency of the A to D converter of 833.5 microseconds, so 0.8 milliseconds. So that's pretty typical of an A to D these days. And if that audio comes in, we go through some FPGAs and various hardware in here, and it goes through the DSP core, and that adds another 354 microseconds, so 0.3 milliseconds. So it gets nasty to figure out what the actual delay is. So you can see as you add more things, you're going to get some latency. We're going to get later into the latency through this expansion bus. But where the rubber hits the road is how people set up these systems is the following. How people use smart analysis software or people that measure loudspeaker spectrum analysis software. If you use that kind of stuff, Dan knows this stuff. How that actually works is you walk out into the venue and you can, in the software, just hit measure, and then it figures out the latency for you, and it even has a button you push in the software that says, oh, the latency from here to here is XYZ. And so notice that measurement is taking into account everything on this chart, which looks really nasty, but in the end really doesn't matter because the analysis system you're going to use anyway will sort of zero that out, probably not the right term, but it's going to make this irrelevant because you're going to be able to make a difference there. You have any comments in this world? This is Mark Rogers' world a little bit. Sometimes.
Well, the acoustical delay is so much longer than this that this becomes irrelevant.
Yeah.
I was going to say, in a sound reinforcement application, just moving your head around, you're going to pick up a millisecond here and there.
Now, if you have filtering, it's going to be more. There's no filtering there, I don't see.
Okay, that is not true. Filtering will not add significant to the latency we're talking about here. It really won't. And we'll show you this number. You can see that when you get into the software. Yeah.
Can you use this system or any other system to tune out ambient noises, like fan noises?
No, you can't really. Well,
I mean, like head can't hit, you know.
So the question was, can you use this system to tune out fan noise and this kind of thing? I would say no, but that doesn't mean you can't break some. You can't help. You can't assist. Let's take an example. One of the boxes we have in here is an acoustic echo cancer. We'll look at this after the break, probably. Should we take a break in what, 15 minutes, maybe 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Something like that. All right. So one of the features in this acoustic echo cancer is this exact thing, because it's pretty common to have a projector in a meeting room, like a fancy corporate boardroom. And in there, they have mics hanging from the ceiling sometimes, or mics that are on the table. And so these acoustic echo cancellers, what they're after is getting rid of an echo. So you talking to your mic or the people at the other building that you're talking over the internet to, their audio comes out of a loudspeaker in this room and it's picked up by a mic, and this gets rid of that echo so they can't hear themselves back. Remember, phones used to do this, still do this. Remember, you can hear yourself back sometimes. That's a different phenomenon. It's not acoustic. That's typically an impedance problem. But same idea. Those echo cancer, the block we make, the DSP block, has a little ambient noise eliminator that listens for broadband noise and would try to reduce the fan noise that is nearest the mic that's closest to that projector fan. So I think acoustically it's really hard to take reflections that are coming from everywhere and use any tool like this of any kind and get rid of that. I don't think that's going to happen. Dan?
So you said the latency for the individual bits and that it will tell you what the overall latency is. What's the worst case latency for this thing?
Boy, that's a loaded question too.
Yeah.
Maybe a good takeaway from that is this concept that in the delay here, this is too long of a sidebar, but the latency is almost always about the A to D and D to A conversion in a system like this. Because the transport between networks and the transport between all our boxes, all that is stupid fast, and it's the A to D and D to A converter that is the major contributor to the latency. So I would almost go with the orange and green numbers.
Yeah. If I can interject.
You can?
With CobraNet, that's not true. The latency of CobraNet can be pretty high, several milliseconds.
Correct.
This system does not do that. The latency through your bus is very, very short.
Yeah, we'll get back to this bus latency. He was saying that CobraNet, which is sort of a technology that's going out, yeah, I shouldn't talk into two mics at the same time is what he's trying to say.
Steve, maybe if you don't mind just...
Your mic just fell off.
Yeah.
Maybe it's worth mentioning for people who don't understand why latency is a big deal. Thank you.
Why is latency a big deal?
In live sound applications, if the sound coming out of your monitor is too long as a musician, then it throws you off. And as someone who's done a little bit of loudspeaker work, kind of the rule of thumb I came up with was if you're under 10 milliseconds, you're okay for a musician, unless you're really, really, really good, and then you need to get down a couple of milliseconds. I think that's pretty elite musician.
Yeah. Another one that's a challenge, my favorite example is if you do a performance venue like an auditorium and you put a loudspeaker in the center at the top of the stage and that loudspeaker is trying to cover the guy in the front row, it's really, latency is pretty important in that application that it's short because the guy standing on the stage 12 feet from you and the loudspeaker is 40 feet from you, you're going to get a nasty thing that's bad. That's where latency really is going to matter. That's probably the worst case example.
Just have to delay the guy's voice out of his mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Or have him stand back 20 feet. You want to take your pick. Yeah, question.
So then the echo canceller box that you make, does it have low latency ADC and DAC in it? Does it have any of that?
There is no A to D or D to A converter in our acoustic echo canceller DSP.
Oh, okay. So it's a DSP box.
It is a DSP box. We'll look at this after the break and you'll see it. It does add latency because it's a DSP algorithm, and that in particular it probably adds more latency than most of the DSP algorithms in here, 19 milliseconds or 18 milliseconds or so.
The example you used of the voice of God speaker and the guy sitting in the, that's just physics. You just can't get around it.
Amen. Yeah, got it. So that's where a good designer understands this, and you got a good designer, you're in good shape, and that's where that single path is the one you want to make sure is good, but you don't care about the under balcony feed. In fact, you better have delay on the under balcony feed. Otherwise, you're not going to think, remember Haas effect, if you ever study Haas effect? Somebody's talking on a stage and they're 80 feet from you and there's a loudspeaker above you. This is 90% of what your ears hear. You delay that just right and then your brain will say, hey, someone's talking on the stage, even though you can't tell the loudspeaker's above you. That's where you better have latency. So there you go.
And that example illustrates what I was saying, that the electrical latency in the DSP is irrelevant because your acoustical delay, in that case of a 40-foot high loudspeaker, you have an acoustical delay of 36 milliseconds roughly. So if you have even a couple of milliseconds in the DSP, it's irrelevant.
Yeah. Of course, if you're mixing different delays together somewhere, then you have other problems.
Yeah. All right, let's keep moving. So let's look at some of these DR remotes we make, some knob-based remotes. How do you turn the volume up? you know, change some settings and this kind of thing. So there's control logic ports on the back of these products. So that's the switch closure fire alarm we talked about earlier. So you can do that or recall a preset or this kind of thing. And then the brown ports on the back are where these DR remotes plug in. And so depending on which of these HAL DSP boxes you get from us, they have some number of these brown ports on the back. And it just so happens that the power and the communications on the brown ports are the same as the power and communication on the blue ports. So these controller knob gadgets we're going to talk about next also plug into the blue ports. So take your pick. So let's look at these DR remotes. We make six different models of these things. So I have them up here. You can see them at the break. But the first one here is just called DR1. And all it does is have an LCD screen, and you turn the volume up and down, a little bar graph goes, and it shows you in percent where you are between zero or mute and 100%, which is full tilt boogie. So here's DR1. The DR2 here in the center, this, all it does, doesn't even do the volume up and down. All this thing does is select stuff. It selects background music or, you know, what the setting for the church is, you know, school or bingo night or wedding or this kind of thing. You scroll up and down, the little black highlight moves, and then you push the button in to select. So it's pretty easy for an end user to understand what that does, right?
What's that reference, sun half, sun full? What's that?
This was me saying that if you're doing a church, it's pretty common for you to say, oh, it's Sunday and the church is full on Easter. Or Sunday is half, or Sunday school, or, you know, rave night is the bottom, you know. You can see I have a sense of humor, so. Exactly.
Arch rave.
Yeah.
Nice POE.
They are not, and we're going to get to this question here in a second. They're not. They happen to use a Cat5 cable, but we'll see what's in the cable here in a minute. So a DR3 is a remote that we sell. We sell the most of these by a lot because it does some pretty interesting stuff. So this one's just showing you that if you do a bar or restaurant, they can scroll up and down. They can go to the drum solos background music channel. I'm a drummer, jazz band. Anybody listen to the drum solos background music channel on XM? All drum solos all the time. No choruses, no verses. Just drum solos. My favorite channel. So that's my favorite. So there's your selector on the bottom. So you scroll the bottom, you know, up and down, and you select what you want, and you push the button in, and you can hear that, and then the top knob is just how loud is it in here. So it's a one-zone control remote. Pretty straightforward. A second way to set up the same exact physical device is in software, you just set it up a little bit differently. Now, this is going to be what I call the not Sunday application we talked about earlier. You got bingo night, or you got the wedding or the funeral or something. There's nobody in the back to run the console at your church. You can go and give them the podium mic, and you scroll up to the podium, and they can turn that down. You can scroll down to the wireless mic and turn that off because that guy's too loud or whatever. So it's a little mixer now in a little one-guy, you know, two-gang box. Or you can make it like a zone controller. There's a ballroom volume and a restaurant volume, so you can have 20 things in this list. So we sell a lot of these things for this kind of thing where you don't want to give somebody a console because they don't know what a 3-band mid-range sweepable EQ is. You know, no one knows what that is, at least most people, and so this would do that. So that's where these we sell a lot of these products to do that thing. A few more products that are control oriented. This DR4 gives you more logic in and out, and it gives you a 0-5 volt pot on the wall if you need that kind of thing. And these RJ45 ports on the far right here, we do a lot of these ballroom combiners where they have the walls that open and close, and so we make an IR remote, this IR2 down here. And what this thing does is you can hang this on either side of the wall, and when they physically move the wall out of the way, this thing senses that. It's just an infrared transmitter pair, and you plug it into the back of our box, and then someone doesn't need to remember to go, oh, I opened the wall, I gotta go push a button somewhere. So it's kind of after that problem. Two more. The DR5, we'll use this nice squeaky voice, isn't that nice? DR5, what this guy does is, this will do your like city council dais where they have a little push button with a red light in it, and they just want to mute and unmute the microphone and the, you know, and the sound system. And so you can take the physical switch here and wire that to the, you know, switch input, and there's a light output that's always associated with it. And so that thing will do that kind of job. That's all that thing does.
Though it doesn't indicate it. Is Rain made written down?
All the
it just said made in USA on the back.
Yeah. Every Rain product's made up here in Muckleton.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, right up the street. Yeah. Stop by the factory. In fact, Marston's coming to the factory tomorrow. We're going to spend the day tomorrow hanging out. We're going to have margaritas and chips and salsa. Oh, wait. Exactly. So, DR6 remote, I got this guy up here. So, that DR3 we saw with the two knobs on it, that really only does one zone. And so a lot of people said, well, how do I do two zones, Steve? So we get that call. So we make a DR6 remote, and that's what this guy is, and this has multiple pages you can have on it. And I can even log in and out. I know you can't see what I'm doing up here, but there's a login. So if you're the manager, you could log in as the manager, and now the manager can get to more pages and do the things the manager does, and then he can go to the page that he can log out on. And once you log out, you can have the staff log in. So we use this in bar and restaurant land and hotels and anywhere you want to put this in the rack for the high school, or you know, the kids can log in, so that kind of thing. So that's a DR6 remote. It mounts to a wall. We sell a couple little accessories separately. If you want to put it on a desk, we make a little desktop accessory with a rubber bottom. We make a rack mount gadget because it's not unusual to put this in a rack. For the sound system, got you?
On those, do you guys program or installers can?
I'll show you exactly how the programming goes next. Should we break first? Let me finish that much and that's what we'll break. That sound good? And so this thing, actually, not to blind you with science, but it takes a little more power. Last I knew, Congress has not repealed the Ohm's law. So
trying.
They will.
They're
trying.
Believe me.
Okay.
Resistance is futile.
NEC will just get it screwed up.
So this is a little power injector that we need to power this guy up. So that's what that does. So you need that. Ships with the product anyway. So there you go. So here's some key features. We'll see this slide again a couple times. One of the keys to calling it HAL, and why the logo here is circled red, if that's the HAL main DSP box, is if you plug any of these DR remotes in, it will automatically send the settings to the device, which means a bunch of stuff. It means things like when some kid takes a baseball bat to this, you can just ship a new one and they can plug it in and it'll turn on and work. And more importantly, when someone takes a baseball bat and we ship them to somebody, no one needs to program this because the program is stored in the HAL box and it's sent to it. And more importantly still is I can send any version of this thing which has software in it. Of course, it's got firmware and software and microprocessor and power and all that stuff. Any version of we've ever shipped, I can plug into any version of these HAL DSP boxes I've ever shipped. Because there's this concept of firmware in this industry where the hardware boxes have software inside and those things better match up before they're compatible. So it's not uncommon in these sound systems that I don't know how often you run into this, Mark, but your installations, you show up and there's 12 boxes from manufacturer XYZ and none of them work together until you update the firmware in this one, which saves 10 minutes or 6 minutes. You update the firmware in the next one, and that takes a little while, and you update the firmware in the next one, and that takes a while, and this product won't do that. The way this product works is you plug it in, and the first thing HAL will do is say, I'm going to send you the firmware if you don't have it, and in 10 or 15 seconds, this thing turns on and gets the settings and the LCD screen updates, and it works. So remember, how many people remember analog audio? Analog audio?
I've heard of it. Perfect. Wikipedia.
Remember analog audio? You plug it in and you can hear stuff. It's not, you plug it in and it's going to work as long as the DHCP server works and the Wi-Fi is happy and the IP address is set and they're not blocking the ports you need on the Ethernet. So this is why they're not PoE. So we'll see later why they're not PoE, power over Ethernet. They're not Ethernet devices at all. And we'll get heavily into that topic. So this is one of the things philosophically why we call it HAL, because this is stuff you cannot do with Ethernet, period. So that's where we're going. So hot swapping, you'll see I'll be able to unplug these and replug them in. I can hot crimp the cable. Even if the rack mount device is powered up, I've got a Cat5 cable out here somewhere, I can crimp a new one on, which shorts everything about it, you know, shorts the power supply, yeah, so what? It'll turn back on and everything works. You can move them around in a portable way, which means if I plug one into one port, we'll see this in a little while after the break, I can plug it into one port and the settings for the LCD screen say, you know, ballroom on it, and I can physically unplug it and move it to another part of the building and plug it into another room, and now we'll say, oh, this is the patio, which is something you cannot do with Ethernet. How many people have tried this with Ethernet? Anybody? You just can't do it. Does Ethernet, you know, Ethernet will tell you that it's on the network. How hard is it to figure out if that device is physically on a certain room on the Ethernet network? How many people have tried this? It is not trivial to pull that off. So there you go. That's where we're coming from. All right. Custom labels, as we sort of saw. Everything is a shielded Cat5e home run cable back to the box. No, you know, daisy chaining from that one to the next, which gives you automatic physical addressing, and that means they can be 1,000 feet away from the HAL. So this is why we don't use Ethernet. Ethernet would be restricted to 327 feet. So we wanted to go much farther, 1,000 feet, with these little controller remote knobs. And we'll see the audio gadgets are a little shorter than that. And more importantly, and this is the key, is we wanted to be able to show you that the device is happy and crimped and the Cat5 cable looks good and their audio is going to work. And when it's not working, we want lights to do something like this that tells you that something's not happy.
Steve, does your boxes have a little test noise test circuit or a beeper or something? You can say beep and actually hear it?
You could if you wanted. There's a sine wave generator and a pitch wave generator. You could do that, but there's no real, you know, automatic way to do that. Yeah. Yes, Dan?
How are you able to use a cable that's only good for 328 feet with Ethernet and get 1,000 feet out of it? Are you not going as fast as with it? Or what?
Okay. So his question was, how can you use this cable and go past me? It's not the cable that is restricted to 327 feet. It's the way you put the data down it. At what baud rate it runs, the data rate that you send down, or what voltage you're sending, how that data is encoded, and you know, how quickly it, you know, changes from 0 to 1, and this kind of, and the ways that it changes from 0 to 1. There's hundreds of ways to do that. And you'll see here, good transition, almost. We'll have, after the break, you'll see when we get to RADs. All we have is just a, one of the twists is a 45 port. How many people remember RS-45? It's a balanced version of 232. That's all that's in one of the twists. And the other twist is 24 volts. And you can go, in this case, you can go 1,000 feet, no problem with 485. And 24 volts on a twist, no problem with 45. And the advantage of a Cat 5e or better cable is what we use or require here is you can go long ways because those are very well-constructed cables, extremely well-twisted, got good noise rejection, so you can go well over 1,000 feet. We just spec it at 1,000 feet.
Would there be any advantage to Cat 6?
There is no advantage to Cat 6 in this case because we're only running, you'll see we're running an extremely low baud rate. The 45 port's only 115K, you know, beyond, yeah.
So one of the gizmos that's 528 by 528, is that using one cable or multiple cables?
That's one cable, and we'll get to that after the break, this expansion bus, we call it. Is it break time? I think it's about break time.
Yeah.
Okay. So we want to take 10 minutes, 15 minutes?
Come back at 9.
Well, we can do 10 if you need the time.
Yeah. I'm flexible. We need the drawing, so maybe we'll start the drawing in 10 minutes.